This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. We'll circle back more college football in a little bit, get some more of our undefeated team potential thoughts as far as some of those odds that are right up now at DraftKings. But we need to transition. We got the final major of the season in the golf world. It is the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool at Hoylake. And to discuss the 151st Open Championship, we welcome in Ben Raza, who joins us right now, Director of Betting at Scotastic. Give him a follow at JazzRazDFS, who joins us right now from New York. And thanks so much for giving us some time here, Ben. You think about where the top of this odds board is at. It's just fascinating to think about how Rory McIlroy comes off of the Scottish Open win, the winner at Hoylake last time it was there in 2014. And yet I'm seeing his odds start to dip a little bit in the last hour. He's gone from plus 657 to 1 at DraftKings. He's now 8-1 as money continues to be bet on Scottie Scheffler. So what do you make of that battle at the top, at least between the two guys on the odds board? Anything you would do with either the Scheffler or McIlroys of the world, as they are your favorites heading into this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. Scheffler, it's ridiculous. It really is. You just look at the form. It's not even recent form now. It's just form. The guy is a walking top five. If the putter cooperated, he would have a handful more wins. But I am a little surprised. I'm not going to lie. I know these are marginal moves, but I think everyone, including me, you saw what Rory did to close the Scottish. So can he break the drought? I thought he would steam the other way. So if he keeps drifting, I mean, I don't think he's going to get to like 9-1, 10-1. But if he ever did, he might be a late add to my card, because currently I don't have either of them on the card.
When you look at the Open Championship, give us some names in terms of how this course plays favorably based on their ability and talents.
Yeah, so, I mean, we never know with the wind. You kind of have to treat that as a wild card. But when I look at this course, I do think that, and we'll see when I start naming my players, I better be right on this, that ball striking and off the tee specifically is going to play a role. And when I look at like the Xanders of the world, maybe the Hovlands of the world, I think that they're going to have an advantage maybe over some of these, you know, short game specialists, putting specialists, things of that nature. So when I looked at my card, I started with a guy like Xander Schauffele just because he's so strong tee to green, and the putter's actually come along nicely lately. I think he really checks a ton of boxes this week.
Ben Raza joining us right now here on Sharp Money. Talking Open Championship starts very, very early on the East Coast on Thursday morning, very late night for us here in Las Vegas on Wednesday night. You think about the guys you're looking to play, the shortest odds right now, 25-1 is where you find Xander Schauffele. It's funny you mentioned Hovland as well, because we just finished recording our long shot show here at the Network Bet, and Victor Hovland was a name that basically everybody was seeing pop in their models. Hovland, also a Colin Morikawa type of player, a lot depending on how the approach will be off the tee because of the wind. How do you expect this course to play from the standpoint of they've lengthened it since 2014, but at the same time, this is a course that still can be attacked with iron play off the tee. It can be very strategic because of the in play out of bounds that you see very rarely in other courses, but is very prominent. Six different holes there at Royal Liverpool. How do you imagine that to actually play out once we finally get to Thursday and see this thing get underway?
It's going to be fascinating because, like you said, you don't really see that. And I do think it caters to some risk reward, but you should have abilities off the tee. I've seen multiple players mention, you know, if you can avoid the pot bunkers, you can be aggressive. And I expect some guys to do that. So it's not to say some of the shorter hitters, I mean, Cam Smith is just a wizard. He will be out of bounds and then he will still make par on multiple holes. I can just guarantee it because that's what he does. But for the rest of these guys, I still think there will be opportunities to use some aggression off the tee. And if there is no wind, I know they lengthened it, I still think they may tear it apart.
Xander Schauffele is seeing now at 22-1 at DraftKings. You can still find 25-1. That is one play for Ben on the card. Anecdotally, Ben, it feels like a lot of the live players, because they're not in the public eye, have seen a lot of drifting further and further down these odds boards. You can get really favorable prices. There are a couple live guys that I do have on my card this week, which I'll get your thoughts on here at the back end. But what was one guy that you did look to target who is in a mid-tier range? And it's funny to think about it, because Dustin Johnson has had major championship pedigree, yet you can find him in that mid-30s range.
You really can. And it is fascinating, out of sight, out of mind. And, you know, we saw, of course, Brooks has already proven. I think we know that the big names for LIV can come in here and win tournaments. And DJ quietly 10th at the US Open, lost strokes putting in that event. He could have really been there with a hot putter. We know he can play links golf. We know he's got all the shots in the bag. So it was not a factor of do I like him in this spot. It was could I find the right price? And I couldn't believe it. I'm not saying it's a gross miscalculation, but mid-30s for a guy like DJ in a field like this, he was one of my favorite clicks on the board, and I do think he has a real chance this week.
30-1 at DraftKings. You can still find him in that mid-30s range, like a 33-1. As we look to go a little bit longer, Ben, who did you start targeting as we got into that longer shot range for this championship that certainly could have a very wide and high variance depending on the wind?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty, blessing and the curse of the Open. This is where I could easily get myself into trouble, but the numbers were so appealing. I'm going to throw out two names if I can, and it's two guys that, you know, on the surface, Hideki Matsuyama and Justin Thomas, these are big name players. These are not unknowns. These are not guys you've never heard of. They've got majors. They're just not playing great golf. And JT in particular, I think it's pretty clear he's struggling right now. He did make the cut in Scotland, but that's about it. He was 9th at Travelers, which I did like. But I'm still just backing raw talent with these guys. And I really believe to see them in the 75-1 range, give or take, was enough for me to say, you know what, they might find it. And if they do, and they get the weather draw that they need, they can be there. And if they're there, I believe they can close. So I may be packing the bags early with one or both of them, but Justin Thomas and Decky both are on my card.
And we mentioned earlier on our network, we'll rehash it again, just the forecast doesn't look all that bad for the first couple of days, expecting mostly sunny Thursday. Showers in the morning Friday with light rain expected in the forecast Saturday and Sunday, expecting low to mid-teens on these sustained winds with gusts in the low to mid-20s. That always is subject to change. We're about 36 hours still from first tee times at the Open Championship on Thursday across the pond as Ben Raza joins us to talk a little Open Championship right now. And then if we go deep, deep long shots, you think about one guy I see on the back end of your card. Who did you identify in that triple-digit range? You think if all clicks and with the ball flight he has, I get why you did it, Ben. Who could be a legitimate threat here to be in the running for the Claret Jug come Sunday?
Yeah, it's always good to have a couple of YOLO plays. And Neiman is a guy I just can't quit. I know, of course, we don't see him as much, but I really believe in, and maybe I'm just holding on to his genesis in 2022 for too long, but he was so dominant in a field that's major quality, and he's still only 24. It feels like we've seen this guy for half a decade because we have made some progress this year, 16th at the Masters, 32nd at the U.S. Open. Do I think he's going to win the Open? No. Do I think seeing like 150-1 in places for Neiman might be a little too generous? I believe he has the talent, and you know, the Wyndham Clarks of the world have proven these guys, if they can connect it, they're not afraid to go out there and just seize it. And I think Neiman at some point is going to do just that.
Ben, you mentioned Joaquin Neiman. I'll give you an example in baseball. There are times, sometimes we hold on to a team too long or don't jump on them soon enough. Is Neiman the kind of guy, and especially in golf, because you just need them to be good over 4 days, you see a plus 150, and it's just, hey, if they can put it together for potentially 72 holes and you take a shot with it? Or is it just that the talent you look at and you say, it's always there? In tennis, I was looking at Nick Kyrgios. He's got the talent and the ability to go deep, but just you're always concerned about betting him. Is Neiman kind of in that category for you?
So he is, and I think that's, you know, they're just coming off, of course, I'm not going to start a Carlos Alcaraz on the golf show here, but yeah, I mean, there are guys with that boom bust ability that, whether it's the dominant serves in tennis or with Neiman, where I like to bet them more in the outright markets rather than say a top 20, where you're more concerned about those, you know, mean outcomes and things. So for Neiman, a boom bust type player, I love to harness that talent and say, I might get some missed cuts, but when he's at his A game, he can beat anyone in the world, and I really do believe that.
Who is the player not on your card that you are most worried about blowing up any of those outright bets, Ben?
Oh, that's easy for me. It's definitely Ty Hatton. I was close to putting him on. I liked him in Scotland last week. If I was 1 week early on Hatton, I am going to be very, very upset this week because I think he checks a lot of boxes, but he did not make my card. And that's what I'm a little nervous about, not going to lie.
Hatton 25-1. Our guy Kelly Bidlin is on him, Ben. We'll let you know that Tyrrell Hatton, like, and he's getting a lot of play as well. Not the only one betting Hatton there at the Open. I did have Brooks on the card this week. I couldn't resist Ben at 24-1. So Koepka was on the card, and then in some placement markets, I went with a little Taylor Gooch, little Brian Harman, and Shane Lowry. So those are some of the three that the four guys that I ended up targeting more a little bit down the board as far as the placement markets goes. But can't wait to see how this one all shakes up. So to recap, Xander Schauffele first on your card, Dustin Johnson. Then as we go a little bit deeper here, Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama, and Joaquin Neiman. Not a bad five group and a guys, Ben, I must say.
I hope so. I just hope to get a couple, you get through the cut, get the right conditions, move up the board, and just be in the hunt on Sunday. That's the key. We can do that. I'll let the chips fall where they matter.
That's all we can ask for. Give him a follow at Jazz Raz DFS. Ben Raz, the director of betting at Scotastic, joining us right now here on Sharp Money. Ben, as always, thank you for the time. Best of luck on all the Open Championship bets this weekend.
Thanks for having me on. Talk soon.
Absolutely. As we wrap up our first hour on the show, VSiN's Sharp Money. When we come back, time to transition to a little NFL, get the latest news and notes and the perspective from the former NFL wide receiver, Mike Pritchard. He joins us right after this here on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Ben Wilson, welcoming you back to the South Point Sportsbook Studio. In for Patrick, Amal Shaw here in studio. Dustin on vacation, so Wyatt Tomczyk is behind the glass. We've had a lot of fun in the first hour, and we're about to welcome in our guy Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, college football national champion at Colorado, because his pecking order is complete, Amal. Pritch's pecking order on his top 20 NFL wide receivers. That's been a very fun summer segment here on the network.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, but you forgot two things in the introduction of Mike Pritchard. First round pick and nicest human being you're ever going to meet.
Sure. Yeah, it's easy to forget that because he just so nice that you tend to gloss over it. There he is, Pritch. Great to see you. And, you and I were doing shows a couple weekends ago back when the DeAndre Hopkins, runnings in as far as teams who are interested in him were still very much wide open, and we didn't know where he would end up. It had just come out the day you and I last hosted that Tennessee had a little bit more aggressive interest in him than, say, in New England. So now that that has been made official, D-Hop to Nashville, going to the Tennessee Titans, what's your read on this Titan team, and how much of a threat do you view them being now to the AFC South?
More of the same, Ben and Amal. Great to be with you, by the way. And I think it's more of the same because they tried this before with Julio and A.J. Brown. Now they're going to try it with Burks and certainly D-Hop. And D-Hop is coming off a situation in which perception believes that he's no longer that dominant wide receiver. Now, he's wide receiver number one with Tennessee, no doubt, just because of the personnel that they have. And therefore, he created a marketplace in which there was desperation, right? And that's why he got the bag that he got, and certainly friendly confines, too, when you talk about Vrabel. And then you think about the other team, New England, with O'Brien. So it wasn't a team out there that was a stranger to DeAndre. And to me, that's telling. I mean, I think when Arizona's eating over $20 million in dead cap, and now, there's desperation with Tennessee, it tells you where these teams are. So I don't think D-Hop moves the needle for me in terms of who I think is going to be the more competitive teams in that division. I think Tennessee still has a great defense, great personnel on that side of the ball, but offensively, still a lot of question marks in that division.
I would agree with you. We talked about this yesterday, Jeff Parles and I. It doesn't make a difference. I love DeAndre Hopkins. At one point, I thought he was the best receiver in the league. Could have made a case for him or Julio Jones. But, Mike, I'm with you. I don't think it makes as much of a difference. I want to go to your Pritch's pecking order in terms of your list. So ESPN Plus had executives, coaches, and scouts list their top 10 wide receivers. You've got 9 of the 10 guys they had in the top 10. And I love your first 5 in the order that you have, because to me, I agree with this one completely. Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, and Stephon Diggs. Tell me just quickly, out of any one of these guys that you love watching or what you love. For me personally, I love JJ. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But out of these 5 guys, is there one guy that you love? And what in particular do you love about that player and what they do?
Well, I mean, this is an impressive list of receivers, great playmakers all the way throughout the top 20 here. But I think when you're in the top 5, you have to distinguish yourself, right? And all 5 of those guys, to me, can play in any system with any quarterback, right? That's not true for a lot of wide receivers. But, Justin Jefferson, he's an incredible, incredible player. I mean, everybody remembers that catch against Buffalo.
Yeah.
And that's what stands out to me. A critical situations, he comes up with a big play. Whether it's a first down or a touchdown, he seems to get open. They seem to utilize him in multiple ways, and it's hard to lock him down. I remember when Jerry Rice used to be an outside receiver, and then teams would go to the cover 2 and double him, so they moved him inside, and okay, that was impossible to cover Jerry Rice again. So I think Justin's doing that. Devontae, I can't stop talking about this guy's game because it keeps evolving, even at his advanced age and certainly his experience in the league. And to me, he's better than Tyreek Hill in terms of a complete route runner. So if you can combine Tyreek Hill's speed with Justin Jefferson's athleticism and height, you have Randy Moss, pretty much, right? Tyreek Hill deserves to be in there, but Stephon Diggs, the sneaky, a good playmaker, all these guys have the ability to separate, but more importantly, Amal, they come up with the big play when the team needs it the most. And to me, they're the ultimate playmakers.
Mike, I want to ask you in particular about your former team, the Seattle Seahawks. They've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, who I think has been criminally underrated his entire career. It was just like Dougie Baldwin. I thought Baldwin was so underrated. But they draft a kid in the first round out of Ohio State, Jackson Smith and Jigba. I don't know how much you've seen him play. I love his route running. I think he's a pretty good bet at 5-1 to be the offensive rookie of the year. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to watch him in college at all. What's your thoughts or anything that you might have heard out of Seattle in terms of what they think of JSN?
Oh, they love him. I'm privy to some pretty good emails being a part of the Alumni Association
there up here,
the alumni there. And so, Seattle inside the building, the Seahawks are sky high right now. And they're talking about some special things happening this year. I think about a month ago, maybe a little bit over a month ago, I talked about including them in the race in the NFC. I mean, it was a three-team race before Eagles, 49ers, Cowboys. Now I believe it's four teams with Seattle. But Smith and Jigba, I agree with you. Everybody remembers the bowl game, his coming out party that way, and then the injuries. But just watching him and studying him, he has all the intangibles. He's a great interior wide receiver as well. But to your point, Lockett is highly underrated. If you look at my top 20, I got DK, who I think needs to become a beast. And if he becomes a beast, then Tyler Lockett complements that. And then who's going to cover Smith and Jigba? So Geno should have the luxury of backing up Geno Smith, the quarterback, should have the luxury of backing up the season that he had last year, because around him, he has supported, his supporting cast is incredible.
All right, win total of 8.5, getting a lot of attention to the over. Smith and Jigba, by the way, at DraftKings, 725.5 is the receiving yardage prop, which if you're bullish on him, if he stays healthy, that could be a good one of the few ones to actually look over, as Mike Pritchard, the former NFL wide receiver, joins us right now on Sharp Money. You see Pritch, the comments from Tyreek Hill the other day. He has a podcast now, which I've actually enjoyed. He has some good insights on that pod, but he said, he said he vowed he would break 2,000 yards receiving this year. Interesting comment. I'm curious your take on that as a former receiver in the league.
Well, you got 17 games now, Tyreek. You got freedom off the line of scrimmage. One thing about Tyreek Hill, Ben, is everybody's afraid to jam him because they don't want to get burnt by him. They don't want to see this guy run by him, and they're scared to death of that. So he has so much freedom off the line of scrimmage. And I believe McDaniel is going to incorporate a ton of plays in which he can get the ball quickly, get the ball out of Tua's hands. He needs to, because Tua needs to stay upright and stay healthy. And then if he can kind of create those situations, and Tyreek Hill run after the catch is incredible, as we know, I think he's got a lot of room to roam. Now, 2,000 yards, I mean, everybody has a goal. I'm not hating on him because he set that goal. But this is the National Football League. He plays in a very, very competitive division. Good luck to him. But I don't know if that 2,000 yards is going to happen, though.
It's funny how Amal, this year we've seen Hill say that 2,000 yards, 1,300.5, by the way, is his receiving yardage prop. And Lamar Jackson this summer say 6,000 passing yards is his goal, and he's never thrown for more than, 3,200?
Yeah, and by the way, the all-time record is 1964 by Calvin Johnson. In 2012. He had 122 catches. Even Jerry Rice, when he had 122 catches, wound up at 1,848. So a lofty goal. We'll see if it happens. Pritch, I want to switch gears on you for a minute here. I want to go to college football. I'm not going to miss an opportunity to talk to somebody who won a national championship. You guys had tons of talent. If people had not followed Colorado when you were there and the talent that you guys had, if you've seen that 30 for 30 on the gospel, according to Mac, a great watch. The talent that you guys brought in, Boulder's a beautiful place for people that haven't been there. How does Deion Sanders duplicate the success that you guys had when you were in the Big Eight and it was Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Colorado that were all competing there for the conference?
Yeah, Amal, Coach Prime's doing it. The athletes that he's attracted, he called him Louie, the luggage, Louie, right? All those guys are highly acclaimed players, and you know, 4 or 5 star athletes. And that was unthinkable not too long ago in Boulder, Colorado, just because of where the program was going and where it was at and what was happening. But Coach Prime, the Prime Effect, has changed all of that. And to your point, I mean, I remember being recruited to Boulder and, you know, just the guys that was on my recruiting trip. I had Rodney Hampton. I had Eric Bieniemy. I had George Hemingway. And there was one other top flight running back. We all came on the same trip. And I'm like, my goodness, this is an incredible collection of running backs that CU is bringing on campus. And that's all about recruiting. And then certainly the mantra out there in Boulder is if you can get them to Boulder, if they can get to that scenic overlook and then they get onto the campus and find out and investigate what's going on, that program is highly attractive, especially when they have it going. So I think that's what's going on. The attention that Coach Prime is getting on YouTube certainly is helping the NIL, the collectives, the support around the program. There's a lot of money in Colorado. And so all that's starting to show back up. And I think, and certainly I know better days are ahead, and I already pounded the over the 3 games right there earlier this year for the CU Buffaloes.
Mike Pritchard invested in the old alma mater, literally, figuratively, for this upcoming year. Before we let you go, as far as the rest of that conference, the Pac-12, what is another team you find yourself very, very high on as we get ready for August?
Well, you know, Corvallis is sneaky up there with the Beavers, you know. I think the whole conference is competitive. I'm on the Pac-12 Football Alumni Council, and I know one of the things, one of the goals that we had a few years ago was increasing the footprint, you know, keeping these guys home. And DJ comes back, right? He all goes all the way out to Clemson, and now he comes back. So I think that's what's happening, too, with the Pac-12. And all these kids who played high-level high school football are back inside the Pac-12. So looking out for Oregon State. Oregon State, and then certainly Washington. With Penix, the quarterback that they have up there is probably pretty good as well.
Yeah, Oregon State, win 10 games. They get DJ Uiagalelei as quarterback, and now it's 8.5 on the win total at plus 120. Give him a follow.
Crazy, right?
And Mike Pritchard. It is funny how that sometimes tends to work. He is Mike Pritchard, kind enough to give us some time here on Sharp Money. As always, great to see you, Pritch. We'll catch up again soon.
That sounds good, guys. My pleasure. Thank you.
We have a great show still to come as well. Adam Berg joins us in studio for an hour to wrap up the show. Up next, we'll continue our talk on the undefeated teams potentially in college football. Little Heisman Award chat as well, right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number 3 of Sharp Money, live from Las Vegas in our South Point Sportsbook studio, as we welcome you back. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. Amal Shaw is here and on the desk joining us right now. He's trying to beat the heat right now. Him and I played golf a couple weeks ago, and man, it was a toasty one. Adam Burke,
was hot.
He's recovered.
I'm still recovering.
Adam, who jumped into his pool fully clothed after the break.
You guys sound like a couple of smart guys. It's only about 115 out here.
At least it was only 105 or so the day we played.
That's a dry heat.
Harl's
a dry heat.
Harl said he played golf on Sunday when it was 118 out. I'm like, why?
Well, because I got to defend Jeff on that. He didn't complain about it.
He did not complain. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to save like $30 to play golf when it's 130 degrees outside.
Yeah. I get it.
Why, is there a discount?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to play.
Oh, half the time. I've had rounds. I just walk out on the course and they go, oh, go ahead. 118. You're a psycho.
So you literally walk out on the course and then continue walking through your round.
Well,
which is just psychotic behavior.
Well, you know, it's a given.
Might need a padded room.
Maybe. That may or may not be a thing coming to a local townhouse near you in the year 2023. Adam joins us right now. We're going to talk college football, first half of the hour, a little baseball to back end it here. But with the upcoming college football betting guide, you had a big hand. We did our NFL football NFL betting guide special a couple weeks ago. College guide coming out in a couple weeks. So first off, just a quick preview: where we stand on that. How I assume basically every team, like we've had in the years past, will be heavily profiled in this year's guide.
Yep, all 10 conferences plus the independents, all 133 FBS teams will have a team preview for in that college football guide. Comes out August 3rd. So
nice, we have
a
date.
Two weeks from Thursday. So it'll be out here before you know it. Very excited to get that publication out to you. Of course, it is a big project. There's a lot of editing, a lot of proofing that's involved. So we're on a good timeline for it. We'll definitely have it out by August 3rd. But I did the AAC, Conference USA, and Sun Belt for specific team previews, and then also have a couple of feature articles in there as well. But, you know, $19.99, that introductory offer over at vsin.com, or $19, I think it is actually, that'll get you the NFL guide, which we released June 29th, also the upcoming college football guide, because that's a first month introductory price.
Don't shortchange the people 99 cents, okay, Adam? Let's go. We're company men over here on
Well, the goal is that, you know, makes you a smarter better and helps you win more bets.
Exactly. That is certainly the goal. We talk about a team that you guys both follow very, very closely, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Adam, you do the Ohio Sports Betting Show every Friday here from VSiN.
Do I have that right? VSiN Saturday Betting Hour.
Oh, sorry. The VSiN. It is colloquially referred to within our network
the Ohio Show. Yes.
That Adam Burke does. So Ohio State in 2023, you come off a year in which you lose again to Michigan. You lose a star quarterback in C.J. Stroud to the NFL, star wide receiver in Jackson Smith, the Jigba. From what the Buckeyes have brought in, Adam, as you've broken down their offseason, with a win total of 10.5, co-favorites to win the Big Ten with Michigan, what do you expect now for Ryan Day as he enters another season where a lot of pressure will be on to get past the maize and blue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that this win total line is actually pretty accurate. I have 10.62 wins in my projections for Ohio State, so I'm pretty much right on the market number. As I was talking about with Amal during the break, I have Ohio State at least an 8-point favorite in every game, except for that game against Michigan. And I got Michigan a 2.5-point favorite in that one, though I do give them one of the biggest home field advantages in the country at the Big House. So that's a big part of the difference in that line. I actually do have Ohio State power rated 1 point higher than Michigan. But of course, there are some big questions. What will Kyle McCord do filling the shoes of C.J. Stroud? But look at me from a skill position standpoint. This might be the best team in the country with Trayvon Henderson, Mayan Williams, and Dallin Hayden all back. Marvin Harrison Jr., who's the favorite over at DraftKings to be the first non-quarterback selected in the 2024 NFL Draft. Igbuka, Fleming, the defense should be better under second-year coordinator Jim Knowles. Should be a great year for Ohio State, but as we know them all, they're defined by what they do in that Week 13 game right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, they got a tough game October 28th at Camp Randall. It's always been historically a tough spot for Ohio State going up into Madison, but I don't think Wisconsin's quite at the level Ohio State is from a talent standpoint, and you're absolutely right. To me, this could be the year where you see a Big Ten national champion. I think Georgia's good, but the schedule is really what elevates them. Alabama's got some question marks, as we've seen. USC defensively, I've got some concerns about them. You mentioned Kyle McCord. If he can't get the job done, Devin Brown, a kid out of Utah, he's a backup. He's got more mobility. But remember, McCord played high school football at St. Joe's in Philadelphia with Marvin Harrison Jr. This team should be elite offensively. I mean, if they almost got C.J. Stroud to come back. They were potentially convincing him. He almost came back. The offensive line, but Donovan Jackson at the right guard position should be an All-American. This team should be really, really good. And I'm with him. Defensively, under the second year, they should be much better under Jim Knowles. I think both Michigan and Ohio State will be undefeated when they meet in Ann Arbor on November 25th, once again for the Big Ten title. I think both teams are going to get in the playoff.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder from the offensive line perspective, you mentioned some of the returners they have, but they did have three offensive linemen drafted, headlined by Paris Johnson, who goes sixth overall to Arizona. So when you think about 60% of your offensive line is brand new. New quarterback in Kyle McCord, who's basically thrown, 20 passes a year, 20 passes last year, 38 in 2021 as a two-year backup. That's the only question mark I would have. It probably helps, Adam, that it's a very soft schedule out of the gates, though.
It is. I mean, look, they do have to go to South Bend and play that game against Notre Dame the end of September, which I think will be a really interesting matchup for them, especially, you know, they'll at least get their feet wet with a road game against Indiana, too. So McCord, I assume Devin Brown should play in that game as well. You should use both of them, as far as I'm concerned, if you're Ryan Day or Brian Hartline. Let them get some experience in a road environment. But I think the one thing that'll be really interesting to see is how is this offense run under Brian Hartline? How much running do they do? Because they have a very loaded backfield. As you mentioned, they do have the three new offensive line starters. I think there's kind of this perception, this expectation that Hartline is just going to air it out because he's the wide receiver guy. But I think that they will rely on the run when they need to. And I think Hartline may end up ultimately with a better feel for when to run the ball, when to throw the ball, what to do in the red zone than Ryan Day's had as the play caller the last few years.
I agree with you completely. Look, Ohio State should have won the national title last year, 4th and 1 at the 34-yard line with a 10-point lead and 7 minutes to go against Georgia. Granted, they didn't have Mayan Williams or Trayvon Henderson. To me, you get 1 yard, you win the national title because they would have beaten TCU. They've got to be more aggressive in the running game. They've been a little bit too pass reliant. You've got to be Ohio State. If you look at them historically, they could line up and play smash mouth football with anybody. And they've gotten away from that under Ryan Day a little bit. They've had some opportunities, even against Michigan last year, they go for it on 4th and 1, Stroud misses Cade Stover. So to me, this team, if they play physical football, they've got an opportunity. And that's what's made Michigan so good. They've played physical football with Blake Corum, with Donovan Edwards. You know, but Michigan's got the same question mark. They've got a talented backfield. Ohio State, to me, is the best skilled position team in college football. But Michigan's tailback room is the best in college football. But the question is, Adam, how good is J.J. McCarthy? And, Ben, can he deliver when the Wolverines need him in a tight game? The Wolverines, just like Ohio State, are probably not going to have a lot of tight games. And what works well for Ohio State is, Ben, Adam alluded to it, they play Notre Dame in week four. If they're playing Notre Dame in week two in South Bend, it'd be a problem because Hartman's much more experienced. But now you've got 3 weeks to break in your quarterbacks. You've got a couple of tune-ups at home. They should be just fine by the time they get to South Bend.
And that's the question, right? I mean, for Ohio State, they at least get a test at some point.
Yeah.
Michigan, I have them a 21-point favorite in each of their first nine games, at least. So they don't really get tested until they play that game at Happy Valley. And I'm a little bit higher than Penn State, or on Penn State, than the market seems to be. I do think maybe Drew Aller will be the guy at quarterback to kind of take them to the next level. I don't like James Franklin in big games. I think he's a terrible in-game coach. Great motivator. Decent guy in terms of game prep, bad guy when it comes to, you know, kind of stopping negative trends, kind of stopping negative momentum. They've had Ohio State on the ropes a few times, let them back in the game, ultimately lost. But that'll be an interesting test for Michigan and their first test in week 11 in Happy Valley. So up until then, we won't really find out anything about the Wolverines, right? Because they're just going to be a massive favorite in all their games. I will say, if I had to take one of the two win totals, I think it'd be Michigan. I mean, I have them projected for 11.15 wins.
Think about last year. It's just funny to me, Adam. We remember the first few weeks of the year, Michigan was favored by a combined 98 points in the first three games. It's like, you'd think maybe they, you know, well, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Sure, they're just going to stick with it. And that's why
it's
I wonder
a lot more this year, by the way.
That's going to be a lot more, yeah.
East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, Rutgers, all at home in their first four games.
George is almost embarrassed by that schedule. I mean, but no, the reality of it is, look, Adam, what I said I would bet is Michigan right now is plus 340 to go undefeated in 12-0, and Ohio State's plus 380. I would bet both of those because I think both these teams on November 25th are going to be 11-0, and whoever wins that game is going to cash that ticket for you. To me, these two teams are clearly head and shoulders above everyone else. You mentioned Penn State. I like Penn State a lot, but I think they're in 2024. But you talk about a great backfield. Katron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, these guys are absolute studs. They're sophomores. They're studs. Drew Aller is going to be the guy in 2024. I think he's got a chance to have a great year this year, but they're still a step behind Ohio State and Michigan. James Franklin said it best a few years ago. He goes, we're a very good football program. We are not elite. They are not elite. That's where they're lacking right now. They've got some good skill position players. They just don't have it overall on their 22.
I just think about if you're going to power rate Ohio State, Michigan, and that's the thing, because they're co-favorites, Adam, from your ratings that you do, and we'll get into the rest of the conferences after the next break, because I am also fascinated by the Penn State win total in 2023. Who comes out on top for you just heading into the year as far as your raw numbers?
So heading into the year, I would have Ohio State minus one on a neutral. Okay. So I do give Michigan a 3.5-point home field advantage. That's why they're a 2.5-point favorite for me in that head-to-head meeting. Maybe that's a little bit presumptuous with the Buckeyes, assuming that Kyle McCord is going to be the guy. But again, I mean, from a skill position standpoint, that talent is off the charts. And the Knowles defensive scheme, I think, takes a year or two to really get locked in. And I think Ohio State should be much better with it this year.
Again, those undefeated numbers we're talking about, them all plus 340 for Ohio State, plus 380 for Michigan this year.
Yeah, and real quick, if they have the national championship odds up, I'm going to tell you right now, I would bet the two teams from the Big Ten. I think they've got a great shot. To me, I don't know where you're at, Adam, on J.J. McCarthy. I have a ton of question marks, but I got to tell you right now, Corum and Edwards are as good of a combination in terms of running the football as we've seen in a number of years in college football. These guys are absolute dudes.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, does McCarthy have to win you a game at some point? Is it the game against Ohio State? I do still have Georgia, the top power-rated team in the country. They'd be a 2.5-point favorite over Ohio State on a neutral, 3.5 over Michigan. But Georgia has plenty of question marks as well, as you mentioned.
Hey, Ohio State plus 650, Michigan plus 850 as we get into the start of this 2023 season. We'll talk about the rest of the Big Ten next with Adam, because there is a team in Penn State that seems like they're in a tier of their own, and then a whole lot of teams with a whole lot of question marks. We want to sift through some of those win totals with Adam Burke, who is the managing editor of not only our NFL, but also our soon-to-be-released college football betting guide. We'll discuss that next with Adam in studio right here on VSiN Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. We are talking college football right now. Adam Burke in studio joining us, managing editor of our upcoming college football betting guide here from VSiN. Also handled the publication of our NFL betting guide, which is out, available right now. Talking some Big Ten football, gentlemen. We'll go to the third team on the odds board in Penn State, plus 550 at DraftKings. If you include, actually 6-1 right now at DraftKings, if you include Rutgers, since a lot of the books with the New Jersey jurisdictions do not allow you to bet on a Rutgers, so to speak, just to clarify how that changes the odds. With all the teams included, Penn State's about 5.5-1. Amal, you've said a couple times you view this being a Penn State team that will be really, really good in 2024. But what's your realistic expectation for them, at least in 23?
You know, Penn State kind of reminds me of what it's been for the last several years for them. 9-3, 10-2. They're going to lose to Ohio State and Michigan. They got to go to Columbus. They've got the Wolverines coming in to State College. I think when you look at it, and I hate to go to a team a year away, but when you put Aller as a junior, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton as juniors, they become probably the best quarterback running back combination in college football in 2 years. But right now, I just don't think they're good enough from an overall 22 standpoint to match up with Michigan and Ohio State. They open up with the Mounties. That's going to be a little bit more of a rivalry game in the area because you've got kids from Western PA and West Virginia. A lot of kids on their roster are from Western PA as well. You get the Hawkeyes in what Adam should probably be a 9-6 game as Iowa plays Penn State in some of the worst football
11-8
games.
11-8, I was going to go with, yeah.
Some of the worst football games we've ever seen. So, you know, the schedule's fine. At Maryland, another game on the East Coast, a little bit more of a rivalry, and somehow they forced this Michigan State-Penn State end-of-the-year alleged rivalry game. This team should be 10-2. The schedule is very manageable. No real challenge there. I mean, you get UMass, Delaware, the Mounties. As I said, this schedule is very good for them.
It is a very good schedule for them. I mean, their season went till 9.5 with some overjuice, and understandably so. I mean, this team, if you ran a bunch of simulations, this team's going 10-2 way more often than not. I mean, do they beat Michigan? Probably not. Do they beat Ohio State? Probably not. Do they win their 10 other games? They should. I have them a double-digit favorite in every single one of them. So this team should go 10-2, and again, it'll be one of those things where their season, their ceiling is defined by if they can beat Ohio State or Michigan. And frankly, I don't think so, but I do agree with them all that they are kind of building towards maybe being closer to being able to go up against those two teams and pull off one of the upsets. But I don't really think this is the year. I do have them as a 3.5-point dog at home against Michigan in that week 11 game.
To Adam's point, James Franklin will have a 7-point lead and it'll be 3rd-and-1 instead of having one of the dudes, and they got absolute dudes, make no mistake about it, between Singleton and Allen. He'll throw the ball and it'll be 3rd-and-7, and you see they're playing, they've got 7 guys in the box and he'll try and run the ball. Remember that play that they ran with Trace McSorley against Ohio State? Nobody was happier than me that he's got Chase Young sitting there waiting for him, runs one of the dumbest plays you've ever seen. That's what Penn State has done. Look, they don't have the same in-state talent in the state of Pennsylvania that they once had, but this program, if they can find a way to get on track, and defensively, they're always consistent, they're always good,
right,
they could be right there in terms of what they're capable of doing in this conference. I just don't see them, though, getting over the top here right now against Michigan and Ohio State.
Was there an in-game coaching matchup that fascinated you more than the Brian Harsin versus James Franklin when you had that Auburn-Penn State game where it was just like just comical back and forth? I mean, it was like fourth down decisions all over the place. Crazy.
By the way, I love that game because that was an easy one for Penn State. But Brian Harsin is one of the worst coaching hires in the history of college football. How do you take a guy from Boise, Idaho to go down on the plains and go compete against Nick Saban? You got to get guys who know how, have to know how to funnel money through the churches to get recruits. Yep. Brian Harsin doesn't strike me as that kind of guy showing up with the bags in the churches in Georgia.
Didn't work out that way.
I'm enjoying this. This is the most animated I've seen them all during one of my Tuesday hours. This is perfect.
Yesterday, Adam, with his top 10 overrated.
Well, I wasn't given a sedative.
That's okay. That's fair. That's true.
It is also.
Patrick's out of town. You elevate your game. I like it.
I don't know about that, but I mean, you know, sometimes if you're being suffocated, it's hard to breathe.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, Amal yesterday was beautiful for his top 10
college
overrated
football.
College
I'm
football
always
programs.
Always fired it up.
Top 10 overrated coaches. Yeah. He's always ready to go on topics like that. But as far as the rest of this conference, are you viewing Penn State as a clear third, or do you give Wisconsin enough of an upside, Adam, this year to potentially compete for that? Wisconsin is fourth on the overall odds board, about plus 750.
So Wisconsin's a really tricky team. I mean, I do have a projection for them of almost 10 wins. So that's definitely above where their season win total line is. It's 8.5 with over juice. I do think this is worthy of an over bet. I think Illinois is a good team. I don't really like anybody else that much in the West Division. But the thing about Wisconsin that's going to be really, really intriguing, couple of things. The first is Tanner Mordecai is what, the best quarterback they've had since Russell Wilson?
It's exactly what I said, yep.
So there's that, which helps them. But the other thing is,
since Allen Everidge, but
I mean, we could keep going back if you want to. But the other thing is, this team is not exactly built for the Phil Longo offense. So I'm curious to see how quickly that takes hold, because they are kind of more of a play action and hope to complete a few passes here and there, run the football a ton. That's not really what Phil Longo's done as an offensive coordinator throughout his career. So the question is, can they work with the personnel that they have and get those guys to be pretty efficient on offense, where Mordecai should be a good quarterback? Braylon Allen is still a very, very good running back. Do they have the talent at wide receiver to kind of execute the route concepts that Longo has? Can they play with a little bit of tempo? The defense should be fine. I mean, Luke Fickell, you know, should do a great job, and Wisconsin's historically great on defense anyway. But that offense, is there a game in there, maybe early on somewhere or something like that, where they just don't really click on offense and wind up losing maybe to a team that they shouldn't? I wouldn't be totally shocked about that. So Wisconsin is a team where they get to ease into the season as well. Buffalo, Washington State's a decent team. That trip to Pullman is interesting. But
they lost to Wazoo, who's a 17-point favorite at home last year.
So. Right. So, you know, I mean, I think if they get time to kind of figure it out and get it together, and if they have it together by the end of October, those two games against Illinois and Ohio State become really intriguing.
I think Wisconsin's got a shot. I don't know where, Adam, you come in on their season win total, but I think they've got a shot to go 11-1. Adam's absolutely right. Tanner Mordecai is the best quarterback they've had since Russell Wilson when they went to the Rose Bowl and lost to TCU. You've got a quarterback with mobility, good accuracy. Remember, Mordecai played at Oklahoma, transferred to SMU, and now he's at Wisconsin. You mentioned Longo's offense. He was at North Carolina for the last 4 years. They were elite offensively. They don't necessarily have that. But for my money, I don't know where you come out on this one, Adam. Braylon Allen is the best running back in the Big Ten. You're talking about, I mentioned Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, Travion Henderson, Mayan Williams, Donovan Edwards, and Blake Corum. I mean, there's absolute studs in terms of the running back, but I think Braylon Allen's as good as anybody, and Mordecai will be more accurate than anybody they've had in a long time, minus the one game Graham Mertz played well in his entire career against Illinois. Yeah. Other than that, you're going to have the best quarterback from an accuracy standpoint. I think this team could potentially be and should really be undefeated going into week number 8 against Ohio State. Should be an undefeated showdown in Camp Randall.
I'm very impressed with what Brett Bielema's done with Illinois here. I do still have Illinois a 6.5-point dog in that game at home against Wisconsin. And I have the Badgers favored in 11 of their 12 games. Of course, the exception being the game against Ohio State. So my projection, 9.99 wins, but 11-1 is not out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say real quick, the rivalry game against Minnesota is always tougher than it appears on paper, because if you're not from that part of the country, Ben, you know, you grew up in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That is an underappreciated rivalry.
It is. And I miss when it was in the dome, it was always special. Yeah. And with the Paul Bunyan's accent, that was like an ESPN 2 11 a.m. Central
yes,
special.
Exactly.
Every single year. Growing up, essentially, as Wisconsin is win total, Adam liking them to go over. Illinois sitting at 6.5. Rest of the conference, Adam, teams that you are looking to fade here that look like, I mean, it's not limited to just Northwestern, who has all of their issues going on with the firing of Pat Fitzgerald, but a bunch of teams apparently in transition. When you look at the rosters, Adam, what teams are you looking at that could be very, very poor on the field this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super thrilled about what Michigan State has coming back. I think that's a team that could end up being pretty bad and may kind of disappoint themselves in some of their games against East Division teams that aren't elite. I think they could have problems, you know, with a team like Maryland, could even have problems with, you know, possibly even a team like Rutgers or Indiana, despite the fact that they don't look very good. There's actually one, I know we're running up against the clock here, but I actually want to ask them all about this one, because they're kind of a perplexing team to me. What do you expect from Nebraska this year?
You know what? Here's the thing. You got Jeff Sims, the Georgia Tech transfer, who's got great mobility, couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat in terms of accuracy. That's a big concern I have for Matt Rhule's team. I like the way Matt Rhule is in terms of getting guys playing in the right direction. They've been competitive. I have some question marks. I'm not as high in Nebraska as other people are, Adam. I've got to see it. I think you need a year to kind of transition and ease it. Think about this. Bob Stoops wins his national title second year at Oklahoma. They were 7-6 his first year. Saban gets things going in the right direction in Tuscaloosa in year two. They're 7-6 in his first year. generally speaking, there is a hiccup in the program in terms of getting to be an elite team until year two. I think this team could be over 500, but I don't expect Nebraska to be one where you sit there and go, hey, they can compete with Wisconsin or sure. Illinois for the Big Ten West.
Win total is 6, which feels pretty spot on, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I ask, I have 4 games for them that are plus or minus a field goal, basically. Yeah. So sure. They have a bunch of toss-up games, and is Matt Rhule the guy going to steward them through those close games and help them win them? Because clearly Scott Frost wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it isn't his 3rd year yet, so clearly, if things go south, it's not Matt Rhule's 3rd year yet, so it's time to wait on the turnaround in Lincoln. When we return, we'll transition, talk a little bit of baseball with our VSiN MLB betting analyst, Adam Burke, right after this.